is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show that's apropos to nothing. What you're about to hear is a panel that I participated in on September 2nd as part of the DragonCon podcasting track. It was called Women in Podcasting, and here it is. Okay, so welcome to Women in Podcasting, the lovely, illustrious panel of female podcasters we have here from many, many walks of life. You are not a woman, Evoterra. Oh, pardon me. My assistant, Evoterra, everybody.
You're lovely.
He's lovely.
Yeah, I'm lovely today.
So, why don't we begin by having all of the members of the panel introduce themselves and tell us which podcast you are with. And we can start with you.
Okay. I don't
know. You got a buddy up.
Okay. I'm Miranda Thomas. I work on the Signal as a voice. I do voice work, and I also help plan the actual episodes. And I'm also a co-host on Firefly Talk. So I'm pretty much in the Firefly area.
I'm Carrie Haley. I am one of the co-hosts for The Signal.
Is this on? I'm not going to be able to say a word.
It's on.
I'm pretty sure I can switch on.
Can you hear me? Is it on?
Maybe turn the switch on.
Maybe I should take the thing off the top. Okay,
you can share if you
Sorry.
Want.
No, now it's a challenge. Me to use this and me not laugh and you guys not laugh. My name is Merle Lafferty. I am the host of Geek Foo Action Grip. I Should Be Writing, and I am co-editor of Pseudopod, and I co-wrote Tricks of the Podcasting Masters.
Yay. My name's Amber Ray, and just turn that down, I guess. Okay. Once again with feeling. My name's Amber Ray, and I co-founded the Georgia Podcast Network, which is a portal site for locally focused podcasts, and my boyfriend Rusty and I, who's the other co-founder, are co-hosts of a show called Mostly ITP, which is for all things inside the perimeter in Atlanta.
I'm Laura Hickman. My husband and I co-host Dragon Hearth, Voyages into the Imagination, which comes out about once a month. But lately, we've had more special podcasts since Tracy's traveled about on his book tours than we've had regular podcasts. So after the summer, we'll be getting back to our normal schedule.
I'm Jenna Oliver. I'm program director for Leisure Talk Radio Network. We started out as a streaming audio internet radio station and have converted to podcast. We have three hosts at present, and I host two podcasts. One of is The Curious Mind, which is basically an interview sort of podcast, which whatever interests me, I interview. So it's very eclectic. And the other, which just launched in April, is called the Fancy Dress Albert Public House. And it is a pub format where whoever happens to wander in, I, the barmaid, will chat with them. And it's all things Victorian in nature, from 18-some-odd to 1901.
I'm Sheila Unwin, and I co-host the Dragon Page with Class, and sometimes I'm, that one's a teacher school type podcast, and sometimes I sit in on Winging It, Michael and Evo's Winging It.
Excellent. That's a very diverse array of female podcasters. I'm sure Mike might be from them, too.
Who are you?
I'm the moderator.
You're also a female podcaster.
I am. I am Swoopy. I am the co-host of Skepticality. And let's begin by talking about why is it that we have to have a specific panel for women in podcasting? What would you say is the ratio of female podcasters to male that you know of?
In this room?
Are they all in this room?
Almost. I can't quote a stat, but it really does seem like a sausage party most of the time.
Oh.
Is that, can I say that here? Is that,
yes, you can.
Can I say sausage party? Okay.
How many of you know more male podcasters than other female podcasters, other than women sitting in this room right now?
All of us.
Okay.
So why is it that we think there are more male podcasters than women podcasters? That's usually the first question that comes up in a women in podcasting panel.
It's I think it's an early adopter thing. Guys see new toys and go, ooh, and then women go, is that how does that fit into my life? Do I want to learn this? Do I have the time? Do I care? And, you know, I'm going to see if he, like, kills himself playing with that. And if he does, then I don't think so. So, I mean, not a lot of women are early adopters of most technology, as far as I know.
I think speaking as a geek, I think you would know.
I was going to say, I think the same thing happened in streaming radio, because that's where I started out. And all of them were guys. You didn't have female hosts, so that's how I got into it. They're like, oh, you're a girl. You want to do it? And I said, okay, sure. So I think it starts out like that. And then, you know, like she said, the boys play with it, and then we're like, ooh, you're going to share, right?
you know how to plug that in? Give that to me.
And I think I was pressured into it.
I think that happens a lot, because especially a lot of the early podcasters were couples.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm included, not that we're a couple, but Derek said, you know, but it was his idea to podcast, and I was drugged right along with him. So how many of you are part of a podcasting show where you are the only woman? Is that the case of any of you?
Does being solo count?
Yes.
If you're a part of a duo, was it not your original idea to be the podcaster? Did you follow, or was it your initiative that started your podcast?
I think it's a stereotype, or not a stereotype, but a presumption maybe that's the way it goes. I've found that actually, because Rusty and I both had the idea. I don't know who originated it. We both just kind of had it, and I've noticed that people. Dealing with people, either people we interview or people we talk to, whatever, people sort of assume that it's his thing and I'm along for the ride.
Mo might have something to say about that, being in an article in Wired last year about women in podcasting.
The
Wired article about, wasn't it, women warming the bench?
Wired Online, yes, how women warmed the podcasting bench and how any women in podcasting were dragged kicking and screaming by their male co-host. And basically just that we were all just sitting there passively, and a male in our lives either put us in front of a mic or grabbed us to sit beside him on the mic, and it was largely offensive. It really pissed me off.
That's pretty offensive.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I have to say, last year, Mike Stackpole at this convention came and spoke to Tracy and I about podcasting, and he said, you must do this, and I didn't even know what he was talking about at the time. It was something completely new to us. Once we understood what it was, just understanding the concept, we fell madly in love with it, went home, explained this to my daughter, who's a film major, who has vast amounts of technical equipment that she just loves to play with and all sorts of toys. And when she understood what it was, she immediately went out and got Podcasting for Dummies, called the people she knew who knew how to do this, and figured it out and got her own program online before Tracy or I did anything.
One thing that was funny about the Wired article is that the guy was at Portable Media Expo talking about how women warm the bench while a woman, a solo podcaster, was winning Podcast of the Year, which was just ironic.
I don't expect that. He didn't speak to Ann Bramley, did he, in that article?
I don't think so.
Ann Bramley has a podcast called Eat Feed, which was an early podcast that's gained quite a lot of acclaim.
Yeah.
From our standpoint, we came at it from radio backgrounds. So when the option came, I started doing internet streaming radio interview program with another radio network who subsequently went under, and I'm sitting here with seven or eight interviews in the can going, now what? And the husband, who is the geek, looks at me and goes, we can do this. And I said, yeah, we can. So we just bought the radio equipment and went from there, and then just automatically we realized that the flip over to podcast was very logical. I do the majority of the editing. He does the majority of the other geeky things that involve. So it's kind of a mix, and I don't try to learn what he does because I don't want to do it.
But that's a good question. How many of you on this panel also do the production end of your show, or at least parts of your show?
because I think that's another stereotype that should be broken, that you're not just sitting there being a pretty voice, that you're also doing the hard work.
I don't do the audio editing. We have Mike Meningay that does that for us, but I do all the posting and the stressing when I can't get it to post correctly and the show doesn't actually get on there and things like that. But, you know, I'm learning. It's been, what, 12, 13 shows, so I'm getting there. Uh-huh. But yeah. It's fun.
It is.
You know? And the pressure wasn't from, you need to do this. It was just a natural progression pressure. So
I can tell you what, at the Signal, what we did, well, Jill Arroway is the person who basically spearheaded ours. And she was doing everything. She was planning the shows. She was audio editing the shows, and it got to be too much. So that's how I ended up starting to do planning. But in our case, it was all girl that got it started. You know, it was all female, you know.
We just let the boys play.
Yeah, we let Les into host, but, you know, Jill really got it off the ground.
Well, Les came in to host, and then they decided they needed two hosts, and to balance that, they needed a woman. So Les and I have been friends for a year, so that's how I got involved. But
it should be noted that the women are doing the engineering on the Signal, which was nominated for a Parsec Award for quality audio, yes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And People's Choice, but we don't know the winner yet.
Yeah, that's Podcast Awards.
Soon.
I do, we probably split our editing work half and half. Basically, most of the operation we split. We split, you know, from building the site, designing it, our site runs on Drupal, all that stuff. We both do all of it. It's sort of those types of assumptions are things that I've been dealing with for a long time as a female working in the technology industry. I'm a web developer. It's my quote-unquote real job. And it's just, so I've been dealing with that for years now and now in the podcasting realm as well. But I think we're going to prove that that's not the reality.
I'm not above calling Mike Meningay for help, but I do all the work. I mean, I'm so a podcaster, so I'm doing all the work. On Pseudopod, my co-editor is a guy, and we're just trying to split the work evenly so we don't have, like, he does all of one thing or I do all of one thing. We're just pretty much trying to split who does the editing and who does the posting and that stuff. So we're just trying to split that to split the work.
So what is it that you think can be had from the unique perspective of women or the unique voice of women in podcasting? What are you bringing to the table that's different than a lot of the male podcasters out there? Because from what I understand, all female podcasters that I've ever listened to or met, very popular, very distinguished, and notable. And so that says something about what women are doing in podcasting. So what special thing do you think that you bring to the table?
I think I will interview probably entirely different people than a male may, and I won't automatically, you know, draw that line, but I see different categories of people to interview that I may not, something intrigues me differently than it would have maybe if my husband was doing the interviews, because his interviews tend to be more activism sort of thing, and mine will get out, and, you know, I've interviewed psychics, I've interviewed ripperologists, I've interviewed people who deal with folks who stalk other people, whether they be male or female. So I think it's kind of fun because I can come at it from the neat thing about podcasting is there's no preconceived notion of whom I should interview. I can just go, this intrigues me, the subject intrigues me, and I think that's kind of neat. And that can be male, female, but I think maybe it gives me a little, you know, I can go, wow, the world's my oyster, so I can do anything I want.
I was just thinking, my husband and I interviewed James Christensen recently, who's a fantasy artist. And when we sat down to discuss what questions we were going to ask Jim in the interview, we had both completely different interests in what was going to be asked of Jim. So Tracy got to ask his questions, and I got to ask mine. And hence, we almost had two interviews from Jim on very, very differing subjects. And I think if I hadn't been there, we wouldn't hear about those things. And I think women are going to think of basically different things than the men are going to think of. And of interest, strangely enough, to everybody, because Tracy Sethin went, oh, that's a great question. That's a good question. Why didn't I think of that question? So it's not that they don't want to hear it. It's just that it may not be the first thing they think of.
I think something else that female podcasters do is bring in a different audience. Because, I mean, I know a lot of the people that I am close to at home are like, what is a podcast? What are you talking about? So in participating, you educate other people. And so, you bring a whole new different audience to what would, you know, typically be people who are scouring the internet.
Have you ever had any feedback from listeners, particularly women, who said, you made me feel, you know, interested enough in podcasting that I'm going to try it myself, or even I started podcasting because I heard your show?
Yes.
I would hope so.
I've had people say that I've influenced them. It's a great feeling. It's just you think you're alone sitting there behind the mic just talking, and suddenly you're a role model. Oh, crap.
Now you have to behave.
I know.
Take that role.
Though not necessarily a specifically women's issue, but maybe slightly more so, have you ever had to feel concerned about your safety in, you know, disclosing personal information on your podcast or having your picture on your website or anything like that?
I never have. I know there are people on our crew who won't post their email addresses and won't post pictures of themselves because of this particular internet stalker fear. And whatever, it doesn't scare me.
I kind of feel like if the stalkers are out there, they're going to find you no matter what.
Yeah,
no, I don't worry about it.
I don't put pictures or say my daughter's name on my podcast. I more protect her. For me, for the longest time on the internet, I didn't want any pictures of myself out there because I didn't want to be judged on that. I wanted to, you know, the internet was awesome because you could put up content and not be judged by your appearance. And
yeah,
I don't know why, but when I started GeekFu, I just figured, what the hell, I'll put a little picture up there. And nothing's really changed at all since doing that. So my little headshot really didn't make things scarier or better or anything for me, so. Except more people could, like, walk by me at a con and go, hey, that's Mara, right? And so that's kind of cool. So
I'm in a very public position in my day job anyway, so for me it doesn't matter one way or the other. So
my picture's been out there for about 20 years.
So putting it up, I didn't even think about it, whether to put it up or not. And, of course, our email addresses are available, and that's just the way it is. And I've never had a bad experience, so hopefully that's a good sign.
Actually, I'd like to extend this question to a specific other female podcaster in the audience and anyone else who would care to respond. Summer, would you like to talk about this particular issue?
Come up here and share my funny microphone, Summer.
Come closer.
Come closer.
For me, it was, I didn't want my picture out there because I had been on the tracking downside of someone who went after somebody, and I saw what it did to her, and I said, no way. But after being here and being amidst 5 billion cameras, it's not going to get out anyway, but if they find me and there's bloodshed, I expect everyone here to help put up bail money.
And she's running away, even now.
Come join us, Summer.
I've never heard of her.
Oh,
we will make her.
Please,
Summer. Come on, Summer.
Hey. Well, and also I think a different side effect would be you didn't post your picture and it became somewhat of an enigma, the mysterious Summer Brooks. So it can be a benefit.
Right in the middle.
We'll share a mic.
No, I thought the anime face would just kind of be a curiosity, and it became a draw. People wanted to know. It's like, well, why does she have the anime face?
And did that make you even more not want to tell them?
when people who I had never met before registered cultofsummer.com for me, it was kind of a, oh boy, okay. But he's a nice guy, so.
Now.
Oh, thank you. Oh, wait. You have to get this part in there. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry. I'll get a closer shot.
Okay.
In the early days of podcasting, where there were even fewer women than there are now, there even among women podcasters didn't seem to be podcasts aimed at what you would think would be quote-unquote women's issues. I still don't think there are necessarily that many. Why do you think that is? Or am I wrong? Has that changed?
Do you mean like political issues or
no,
podcast?
Stereotypical things that, well, there was the mommy cast that came along, and that was kind of a big splash because it was about being a mom.
Right.
And I mean, that's a specific to women type of a thing. I mean, everything else is somewhat analogous. I mean, tech or geek or, I mean, male or female, it doesn't really matter. So, do you think there's a niche audience for that? Because some of these techie podcasts, you are women who are early adopters of technology, most of you, or, you know, had been in radio or somewhat, so that's not a thing. But do you think more women who are not tech people will migrate toward podcasting to talk about hobbies or things like that that are less techie? Do we see that happening at all yet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Hi, guys. My name is Leanne, and I have a podcast called Tag in the Seam, and it is chick stuff. And it's kind of funny because I actually got these two guys to shave their legs. And it's not ridiculous girl stuff. It's not like, you know, I'm going to wear pink, and I like pink. Not stuff like that, but it was like I got an interview with the doctor that does my laser hair removal, because that's interesting. A lot of people want to know about that. So I got to interview him, and I actually did a piece where you were in the room with me in my portable recorder and got to hear what it sounded like to have it done, and that's kind of cool. And what else did I do? I do little essays. MERS actually inspired me to do a lot of stuff, but I do a little essays where, like, one is called, what was my first one? Skinny Headcase Evolution, where I talked about why women are so obsessed about the way they look and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I do women's issues, but it's not
girly
stupid. It's like fun stuff. So clearly you should all check it out, and I've put some cards out there for you.
Stand up and show your t-shirt.
Oh, yeah. And here's my little shirt, and I drew my little girl. It's good times. You should all check it out.
Why were you on the promotion panel?
I don't know. And I got sucked into it. Well, I didn't get sucked into it, but I used to be really, really cool until I met him, and then we got engaged.
Oh, no.
And then I've gotten nerdier and nerdier and nerdier as it's gone along. But yeah.
Step 7, Leah.
Shut up. I don't. No, but I'm having fun with it. But I do a lot of stuff sort of like Murr, where I do more essay-oriented stuff and go out and interview people.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Ask away.
How do you market to specifically to women? Like, obviously, I didn't know that you have that. Now I'm going to.
But now you do.
Oh, look, now I know. So do you have, like, a way that you want to?
Oh, and you know more now.
Thank you, honey.
You know, it's actually sort of hard. What I've started doing is talking to a lot of the girls I work with, because I work in a hospital, so that's a really female-dominated occupation. So I run around and wear these shirts at work with script pants, and they're like, what is that? And then I'll just start telling people, and I don't know. I have a live journal, so I talk to a lot. I get a lot of people off of live journal, and then I met Amber through the Georgia podcast thing, so that's pulling people because I live here in Atlanta.
Yes, she's a proud affiliate of ours.
Yes.
Awesome.
It's good times, but it is kind of hard because there's a lot of girls that don't know what this is, but I think I'm trying to pull them in there to say, hey, you want to watch two guys shave their legs? They even have pictures. It's really funny.
you know, or
that site's being taken down.
Shut up. Or like, I did the bridal gene. I lack the bridal gene, and I have to plan a wedding, and I hate them, and I think they're stupid. So
we'll
I did
talk
this
after.
Whole thing. Yeah, I did this whole thing. So that's what I'm trying to market. The it's I call it real women. Just because that's what I think it is. It's real chicks. You don't have to like pink. You know.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to hold your mic.
You're really good with it. You definitely should keep a hold of it. So that kind of leads into a question that, again, has been asked before. Do we think, and has it happened, is there a women's podcast network? Is it necessary? Would it be useful? I mean, do you want to classify yourself as a woman podcaster, or are you just a podcaster who happens to be a woman?
Well, I think it would be useful to get podcasts like hers out.
Oh.
I mean,
yes.
Obviously.
You have a
live
journal, too, sorry.
Right. I mean, the one that I'm involved in, it's a fan cast. It's set in a specific genre. So that's the podcast I listen to, and, yeah, it's kind of male-dominated, but that's how I found Mer and Swoopy and... all these people, but you know, people who aren't doing things set in a genre totally need to have their own little place.
Yes,
so the women's podcast network would be awesome.
Because you don't, just a society.
Right.
This is always a touchy subject. I brought up this subject at the January Podcaster Con in Chapel Hill, and I was
that's
up
why
there
I had to bring it up again.
All by
I wanted
myself
to see what happened now.
I was up there all by myself. I had laryngitis. I'm talking into the mic like this. I sound like shit. And I raised this question, and I have more women in the audience who are just like, that's a really stupid idea. Why do we need this? I don't want to be ghettoized. And I'm like, crap! No idea what to do. So that was a lot of fun. So I've thought a lot about it, and it's a difficult thing of, do you want to be, if you're an African-American writer and you write sci-fi, do you want to be in the African-American section in the bookstore? Do you want to be in the sci-fi section? Are you upset if they put you in the African-American section? I mean, it's difficult. But for podcasts, there are over 150 directories out there. So if we had a directory of women podcasters, that doesn't mean you can't be on TSFPN or Sci-Fi Pods or Podcast Pickle or the Tech Podcast Network or the Gay and Lesbian Podcast Net or Cube Potter. I don't think you have to just be a female podcaster, but if we did have some sort of group, I still think it would be worthwhile to have some sort of group, whether it be support or information or whatever. I think it would be useful, but back off. I know people disagree with me, and I'm okay with that, but dude, I'm still stung from
January. No, because I hate the idea until you say that, and then I'm like, well, that's perfectly logical. So.
Well, I think it's a matter of not being pigeonholed, and like she said, as long as you're not pigeonholed as an only, you know, only catering to female, you know, a female audience or only catering to female podcasters, then... yeah, it's a good idea because it's a way to spread that particular niche without, you know, without having to go to every single person you see on the street and say, here, listen to my, you know.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe the directories need to branch out into more topics because as an early female geek in a world where there weren't any, I mean, literally when I started 25 years ago, I was a Unix sysadmin. You could count female Unix sysadmins on two hands. Right? I'm a hell of a lot older than I look, okay? And so I've been there, done that, no big deal. If you know what you're doing, you know what you're talking about, people will listen. So it doesn't matter if you have, like, you know, knitting podcasters or cooking podcasters or skydiving podcasters. As long as it's a topic somebody wants to get to, as long as the directories have enough topics, I think you don't have to have one specifically for women. Because people, if your podcast is good, people will come to you and stay. It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman.
Well, and I think it's just, I think it's another marketing tool. I don't think you have to choose one or the other. I think if you can, you know, your
your ideas to get your word out as much as possible. And if that means being in the women's section one place and, you know, science fiction somewhere else or wherever, I think that works.
I mean, being a woman might attract somebody who might not necessarily listen to a podcast, but saying, you know, specifically we need a women's podcasting directory, maybe not. A support group, yeah, but not a directory.
I think there are a lot of, I hate to be stereotypical, but if a woman is not a geek, then some people may be hesitant to jump into big group of mostly male podcasters and say, hey, how do I do this? Can I get some help? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of women are more likely to ask for help from other women. Mm-hmm. And so, and like I said, a lot, not all. I mean, clearly we all did pretty okay by ourselves, but it's like Summer said, the support thing might be more, you know, just say you got these mentors out here ready to help out if anybody's got any questions.
You know, maybe Friends in Tech needs a, you know, women techie page or something, just with links to other women podcasters or women geeks. I just opened the door, didn't I?
Okay, I have sort of an analogous situation. Women who may not know.
Say who you are, Martha.
Sorry, Martha Holloway with ADDcast and Balticom Podcast. Sort of an analogous situation. Women may not know the technology, but then there are kid casts too, mm-hmm. and kids may be in the same position. So is there, would it be better to have a learners or entry level sort of support group for podcasting? That was my question at PodcasterCon, mm-hmm. rather than being specific to women.
Well, using your children analogy, there is a teen podcast network. There already is, you know, that. I don't know. I've been talking a lot. Someone else is talking.
I think the more categories you can have, the better, is my feeling. And if you can get support from those groups, that's even better. You know, whether it's a teen getting help from another teen, or a woman getting help from another woman, or woman getting help from a man, it's going to help everybody and get the word out. So.
Well, I think the original hope and intent of possibly creating a women's podcast network was that it might draw more women to podcasting if they felt like they had a place to go. So, and I think that's logical also. Is there, I thought we mentioned that there is some sort of women's podcasting network.
I think someone's trying to put one together.
I think that's what we said in January, too.
There's one?
Give us more info.
Because I submitted mine to everything I saw, and I thought,
what?
It's ridiculous. It takes like 3 weeks to get up on it.
What? Are they checking if you're a woman or something? Or?
Yeah, there I go again.
There
is, and I think it's Women in Podcasting. You found it, didn't you? It was womeninpodcasting.com, and I added it just like you do any other kind of page, but it took that girl forever to put that on there, and I actually emailed her. I'm like, hello, I put this on there.
Why
like,
2 weeks ago, where am I? Live journal community while you're at.
Oh, I should. Well, I only have like
that mic again.
And she's holding it in both hands.
Well, I was sitting around the other night, and I don't know, I just said, you know what, I'm going to do this little women podcasting. I think I call it Women Podcasters, so it's, mm-hmm. What is the URL when you have a community? LiveJournal. Who knows?
Yeah, it's the name and then
LiveJournal.com.
Community.com
/community/ Women Podcasters. But, okay, I'm so sorry. But no, I started that because I'm thinking, well, maybe if I can, you know, because there's a regular podcast little community that I'm in, but there's not a whole lot going on in there. And then I have my own little page that I pimp it out all the time. And then I started that, and I think it's you and Laura. Yeah.
And I agree.
So it's just us three. So just come on.
Mm-hmm. I agree that the more places you can sort of spread out and market yourself, like there's the danger that you don't want to be pigeonholed. You don't want to be just, you know, you're the girl podcast or you're the woman. But you can be, you know, a woman podcaster, a geek podcaster, a southern podcaster, you know, all of these things all at once. And just, you know, people don't fit one niche only, I think. And so it's finding all of those that apply to you and, yeah, pimping it out.
What does podcasting give you as a medium as opposed to other mediums?
It lets me hit Evo when he gets out of line.
And she has my permission to do it as much as possible.
In my own right, I'm an author, so rather than using some of the more traditional ways of getting my name out there, and because of my broadcast background, I decided to do the podcast. It's a rather subtle way of getting Jana Oliver in front of people's noses on a regular basis, and then if they find what I'm doing of interest, then they may go out and follow up and go to the website and go, oh, well, she also does this, and every now and again I'll slip in, besides running other people's podcasts, commercials I'll run, or their ads or spots, I also run mine every now and again, not constantly, but just kind of a subtle, I'm out here, you know, if you're liking what I'm doing and I sound interesting, buy one of my books, please. You know, so that's why I've done that.
In that thought, Tracy and I are a lot less subtle. We admit that Dragon Hearth is a promotional vehicle for our products, of course, but also that we just love to share the things that we discover on our voyage of imagination, and that we also do a lot of workshops when given the opportunity. And so this is one way we can do that and put it out there on the air without having to schedule it. It's our schedule, too, and that is one of the things I really like. It's something that you want to say to people, but you get to say it on your time.
I get to give back to the community all over the world, the world community, and in the fact that I can give recommendations for books, young adult books, because all of us read, well, most of us read adult books, but there's so few adults that read young adult books and can actually give an honest opinion to a child, a parent, about what that book's about. So we have authors on, and we talk about what happens in the classroom. So it's fun.
For me, it started as a social thing. Les and I had been friends for years, and it opened up in a whole new thing. I got to meet Miranda and a whole bunch of other really cool people. And then about 8 months ago, I relocated. I moved to a completely new town. And believe it or not, every single one of my friends in that town are all Firefly geeks and brown coats, and every single one of them listened to the podcast and were so excited when I showed up in town. And I'm like, great, friends. I didn't have to work hard at it at all. So for me, it's a social thing, and I got to come here and meet a whole slew of new people. It's awesome.
I would agree with that. It's just, it's fun, and it's given me the opportunity to meet people that I wouldn't have met otherwise. Rusty and I do a lot of interviews in our podcast, and so it's given me the opportunity to meet people in the community that are doing cool things, that we interview people who are doing cool things but not getting the attention they deserve. And I don't know if I would have, you know, met and talked to a lot of these people otherwise. And so I guess, you know, also you could say networking, but that sounds kind of businessy or whatever. But, you know, just meeting lots of different people, and it's just fun.
So it seems like a lot of the podcasters we've talked to, male and female alike, but I have to say tendency toward male, they are podcast addicted now, and many of them have more than one show. How many of you have more than one show or are working on more than one show?
Yeah.
How many, and are there going to be more? I mean, have you realized you need to stop, or are you just gonna keep doing it?
I'm tired of making business cards. I sat down in front of Photoshop to make some pseudopod business cards, and I'm just like, I'm not a graphic designer. I hate this. No more podcasts. So that really was the graphic design part of it.
I can't believe you say that, because all of your graphics are completely awesome. I saw the pseudopod graphic in iTunes, and I went, oh, and then I saw it was yours.
Well, I didn't do it.
Well, yeah.
I was just saying, I'm tired of, like, grabbing the graphic and putting it on there and my name and the URLs and making sure they're all right, and then printing them out and realizing they're all an inch over, and then wasting the paper. And really, it's all down to wasting those little pre-cut sheets of business cards. No more. I'm done with three.
Yeah, I just order your business cards from a service, and then they can worry about that.
Oh, then yes, I will be doing more podcasts. Okay, there you go.
I'm so glad I was able to convince you, because it would have been a horrible loss.
Honestly, I think I'm done with pseudopod. That's three's enough.
You say that now.
I do say that now.
You say that now.
How many do you have, Summer?
Yeah.
That I'm directly involved with or peripherally involved with?
Time is time. How many? Yeah, come on, be honest.
Slice of Sci-Fi, Slice of Sci-Fi voicemail. I arrange the interviews for Cover to Cover. Sometimes I arrange the interviews for With Class. I am on Babylon Podcast. I am on and I do the editing for Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. I know I'm forgetting one.
Winging it.
Yes. Every now and then I pop in on Winging It just to pull everybody back into shape. But the key is to put logos on the back. One card, many logos. One card.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But you have to make new cards every time you do a new podcast.
Yes. that's the drawback. But.
I'm involved with total, I think, 5. Obviously, the mostly ITP is the show that I'm actually on, but the Georgia Podcast Network is the portal site, and so we, you know, do editing and you know, play sound engineer and stuff like that for some other network shows that we have. We have podcast parties every month, and people come over and record a bunch of them, and, you know, I sit there with the mixer and the monitoring headphones and feel all cool, and so I'm involved from that side, too.
Presently, I'm only involved in Dragonhearth, although I did recently register ragdragon.com.
See, here it goes.
Yeah. And, well, it's Tracy's fault. He gave me my own microphone for Mother's Day.
But don't you also have a patio book?
Oh, that's right. That's right. We do have a patio book. The Immortals. And so, but I wanted to do a bedtime story podcast for children, and so I registered it, and Tracy's encouraging me in that, and when we get home, among other things, I'll start that.
I have 2, and that's as far as it's going. In fact, probably sometime in the next year, I may truncate it down to just the Fancy Dress Albert Victorian one because of the detail that I have to go into to do the interviews for that, because it's not actually an interview. It's just a chat in a bar, which is a lot harder than actually asking questions and going back and forth. So, and considering my writing schedule, frankly, I think I'm actually going to go down one so one of you guys can pick up one. But no, 2's been plenty, because we also deal with the other 2 podcasters, and my husband does the editing for those, and so 4 in a network is plenty, because any given week or any given month, one of those guys hits, and we'll have 500 to 1,000 downloads in every 2 weeks, and you know, we're looking at bandwidth, so we're going, maybe we ought to cut back a little bit to get another job.
Well, obviously, I'm the co-host with Dragon Page with Class, but I do some of the scheduling for that, you know, different things. I'm also involved sometimes with Winging It. Mm-hmm. I just come in and sit down and give my husband hell.
It's enjoyable.
Somebody's got to. And then I also do some of the back-end work for patio books. You know, so I don't see myself stepping up to another one just yet, but I don't know. I'm still new in all of it, so we'll see what happens next year this time and where I'm at.
Most women I know, and definitely most women podcasters I know, are overachievers by nature, and we think we can do everything, and we think that, you know, time stands still for us so we can get everything done. How much of your time has become devoted to podcasting, and have you had to give anything up to make time for podcasting?
Okay, our entire Saturday is spent podcasting. We drive an hour and a half just to get down to the studio to do all of that, plus whatever happens during the week. So it's a lot of time commitment for our entire family.
Yeah, it definitely takes away from, I mean, I guess whatever kind of social life I ever had, not that I really, I mean, to me this is the social life, because it's fun, because I like it, but it takes, you know, I have a regular job, so it's a nights, weekends, and recently mornings type of thing, and I wish I could just find a way to eradicate the need for sleep. I think that would solve all my problems.
I'm trying to think how long I actually invest in it, because it varies depending on it. For the one show, because if I'm interviewing an author, I do read the book from cover to cover so that I have a sense. I don't skim them, I read them. And so that takes a good deal of time. And then, you know, for the Victorian podcast, I have to go out and do the Victorian research so that I can guide the conversation in appropriate ways without sounding like I'm asking questions. And I have no idea. It seems to come in spurts. It isn't every day. And then I'll just blow a weekend trying to get three or four podcasts ready, because I'm going to go on, you know, I have three or four conventions coming up and I need to have them ready and in the can so that I'm not going, oh my God, I'm getting home at 6 o'clock and I've got to have this thing done by midnight, which happens every now and again. But so I can't really see what the time. What have I given up? I don't watch any TV. Television does not come on in our household. It does not exist.
What is TV?
Yes, see? It's a thing.
It's a 20th century thing.
Yeah. I watch more TV, because on Slice of Sci-Fi, I'm pretty much the only one watching television. I try to watch, at least give a start to all the stuff, so if a new show comes on, I'll watch it. I'll give it, you know, minimum 4 weeks before I say, okay, I can't watch this anymore, I don't have time, or this looked pretty good, I'll record it and watch it later. For Ninjas, I read the books, or reread them in most cases. I'll rewatch the movie or rewatch a couple of episodes of the TV show. Babylon Podcast, I'll watch the episode sometime before we talk about the episode, even though sometimes the interview will go so long we actually don't talk about the episode later. And it's a 45-minute drive from my place to Mike's, so we're talking, let's see, all day on Saturday, 8+ hours, plus 4 to 5 hours on Wednesdays, and that's just studio time. So you figure all the TV watching, yeah, that's about 50 hours a week.
Full-time job.
Oh, yeah.
I think for us at The Signal, because we have so many people to spread the work out with, we have people that just do writing, we have people that just do voice work, we have people that, you know, probably the person spends the most time is Jill. So luckily for us on that count, I mean, I probably spend, for The Signal, when I plan a cast, I probably only spend maybe 5 or 6 hours total in the work that I have to do personally. But
when you guys were chasing down interviews, how long did it take you to actually arrange those?
That's passing out the book.
Yeah. Les does most of that.
Les does most all of the...
I tried last year for Alan Tudyk, and I think I probably spent over the course of, say, a month and a half before I finally got a no, because he's too busy, yeah. Thing. You know, an hour a week, maybe, emailing back and forth with agent and all that kind of stuff. Calling agent and all that kind of stuff. Well, we passed her and they finally said no, so we left them alone until this year. I feel really bad on this panel saying this. 45 minutes every 2 weeks.
I would say good for you.
Yeah, well, that's because Jill and Miranda do all the script writing and all that kind of stuff. And so Les calls me on the phone and we get on the microphones and we record, and it takes us 45 minutes, essentially. Although when we have weeks with interviews, like our last show, we had an interview with QMX, who were doing props and stuff. We were probably on the phone with them for an hour and a half because it was just so freaking fun to talk to them. So on the off week, I'll have like an hour additional because we're doing an interview. But
that's one of the benefits of having so many people
on crew
work, you know, on the same podcast. I mean, we don't have the problem where we, you know, like Mer, she's to do her whole show herself. We don't have that problem.
Although I'll say with the QMX, we talked for an hour, hour and a half with them. Jill spent 5 or 6 editing the interview. So.
Excellent. I think maybe at this point, unless somebody else has something that hasn't been asked that you think is pressing, we'll open it up for questions and comments from all these people out there. So raise your hand if you have a question.
Hi, I'm Sam Schiff from Bears Grove Podcast. My partner, Cynthia Armistead, does Fibrant Living at FibrantLiving.com. It's a podcast about fibromyalgia and how to live with chronic pain and fatigue. And she's very
introverted. In fact, she's not even here. But she really has a hard time dealing with, like, public and that sort of thing. But she really has a lot to say. So I find that she, I mean, what she told me is that, you know, podcasting is one way for her to do this. And because of the chronic pain, she doesn't have to type it. I was wondering if y'all, if any of you have a similar experience where you're really kind of an introverted person that would rather not be in the spotlight.
I used to be.
Yeah, I was. I was too. I don't know. I still don't like just going up to people when we do the kind of interviews like at the, like here at DragonCon, where we go up and just, you know, shove the recorder in somebody's face and be like, hey, your costume is weird. Talk about it. You know, I feel weird doing that. I don't like doing that. But I like doing interviews and stuff like that if it's planned ahead of time, and it's a way for me to meet people, like I said, because I'm, you know, I'm not the kind of person who's really going to go out of my way to meet people, and so this has been another way for me to do that.
I'm pretty outgoing, and I really like talking to a lot of people in person, live, and so I have a hard time. I had a hard time when Tracy sat me in front of a microphone. I didn't like the sound of my own voice. I froze. I didn't know what to say. And which is funny, because if I'm just talking to somebody, you can't shut me up. But to have the mechanical piece in front of me and actually feel like what I was saying was meaningful was really tough to begin with. And it's gotten easier as time goes on, and I've gotten used to what I sound like, which I, for me, was really difficult.
I have the same issue. I sound like I'm five. So I really dislike the sound of my own voice. But I can talk anywhere to anybody. I'm not shy at all. But the microphone itself, it stresses me. And at my school, they'll hand me the mic and I'll hand it back. 350 kids in the gymnasium, and I've got all of their attention without the microphone. So this I don't like.
I don't have a problem being out in front of people. The thing that I try to do, I always usually do some sort of interview or chat sort of format. I tried to do the 20-30 minute podcast where I just talk about whatever's on the top of my head. I cannot do that. I am so in awe of you people who can and hold it together. I went back and listened to it, and it was an absolute heap of phrenic mess. And I went, no, I work better off of someone else where I have that interaction. But so for those folks who can go out and do their podcasts and just talk in a normal conversational tone and tell you all sorts of lovely, God bless you. I can't do it.
I think I'm pretty much an absolute ham. But the problem I have, thank you, Swoopy. And the problem I have is actually, like, here, as Leanne will attest to, is when people come up and say, I love your podcast, it's so awesome. I go, thank you. And then people apologize for shocking me, and I'm like, no, I think it's me. I know how many listeners I have. I look at FeedBurner. I look at the downloads, and suddenly, you know, when they actually turn into real people, oh crap! So I can get in front of people and talk because it's like no one's actually saying anything to me. But suddenly, if someone comes up and tells me that they're my fan, I get a little freaked out. I don't know. It's just a shy thing.
I find that surprising.
I'm sorry.
No, it's very interesting. I've learned something about you.
Okay.
I was going to say, does anybody else have that same thing when you meet someone or the first time you have somebody come up and say, I love your show or I've listened to you, especially if, you know, you haven't been in broadcasting before or if it's a new phenomenon? How do you handle that? Does it, you know?
And I'm sure that I haven't had it as much as some of the other panelists here, but, I mean, there have been some people come up and even people, you know, just out at random places recognize me and be like, aren't you Amber?
That girl that stuck that microphone in my face?
I was at, several months ago, I was at an event apart, the web developer conference that came here, and on the lunch break, I was just sitting there at the table by myself eating my lunch, and this guy comes up and he's like, can I sit here? And I just thought there was nowhere else to sit. And he says, he introduces himself, he says, you know, you're Amber, right? And I said, yeah. He said, I read your blog. And I was like, whoa, and then we started talking, and I said, you know, something like, oh, I just moved to Decatur, and he said, yeah, I know. I mean, obviously, he would know, he's reading it, you know, or people are listening to the podcast, but still, it's
that one moment of, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh,
whoa.
You know, for me, it's been funny, because Evo, he has people coming up to him all the time, oh, we love your show, da-da-da-da-da, they send him emails, whatever, and we're so new on ours, and so for the last couple months, we've had people coming up to us, and I'm kind of like, oh, you listen, that's so cool, wow, you're the third one, I love that.
That's it. Oh, come on, Summer. You gotta have.
It was a complete.
Especially now.
I really didn't expect that sort of response. I actually thought they were joking when they were like, "We love your voice. Keep talking. You gotta talk more. Shut Michael up. Shut Evo up."
Actually, I think that's one of the things I first said to Evo. Like one of the first times I met you. You know, that Summer girl. She sounds like she's in a box. I said, she's got a great voice. You gotta fix that. And it got better. And yeah. I was thrilled.
It did. And just like every now and then, because the picture's not up on the website, you'll see people walk by and hear me talking. Wait, I know the voice. Yo, I'm like, hi. But I'm getting better at that. But
okay, other questions from the audience?
I should not respond.
I do have a question. For a woman trying to get into podcasting, what is the best advice you can give?
Love what you want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love it.
And then actually do it. Put it out there.
Okay. Invest in good equipment.
Because my husband wants to get me into the podcast with him.
That's how it starts.
That's how it starts. Get into it, but I personally have a problem with my voice because there's some times where I have certain words I can't say. And I'm so scared I'm going to get on the podcast and I'm going to screw it up.
That's what editing is for.
I would say trust yourself. You know,
do what feels comfortable to you, because if it doesn't feel comfortable to you when you're doing it, you're not going to want to do it and you're not going to love it. And if you really do hate your voice that much, that could be something you could play with. You could use a filter. You could change your voice. You could make it something completely different. That's you can sound really good on a microphone and than you do in real life.
Yeah.
What are your own favorite podcasts?
Quick, Mars, you're running out to go to the Parsec Awards. What's your favorite podcast right now? Pseudopod.
No. Okay, no, actually, Skatepod right now.
Okay.
So, there you go. I got to get ready for the Parsec. Parsec's in half an hour.
Regency 5 at the Hyatt. Oh, I like your voice. Freak out.
Favorite podcast.
One of my favorites is Adventures in Podcasting, and that's an educational podcast. So,
all the podcasts that are affiliates of the Georgia Podcast.
They are.
I'm addicted to audiobooks right now, so I'm not listening to many regular ones other than like Slice of Sci-Fi and Geek Foo and you know my normal skepticality, my normal ones. Yeah. Seventh Son. Jones in for the next ones to start coming out. I'm currently listening to Infection. I've listened to Earthcore and Ancestor. What else was I? Moravi. Kind of all the big ones that came out first. I'm kind of still muddling my way through, but I signed up for Patio Books and I've got like jillions in my subscription list, but I'm going one at a time.
I listen to Top of the Pods. And I've just started listening actually to the MuggleCast and PotterCast, so I was very late in the Harry Potter whole phenomenon, so now I'm trying to catch up on that. But those are the two I have in my to listen to now in my thing at work. Mm-hmm.
I would be remiss as a mother if I didn't say I like Confessions of a Production Assistant, because it's what my daughter does. Angel Hickman, she does an excellent podcast, and her story, a lot of her stories are hilarious, because of course when you're just starting out in the business, they just torture you, and she confesses all.
Excellent. The Signal inspired me to think about doing the Babylon podcast, so I love The Signal. Firefly Talk I listen to. There's one called Out of the Past, which kind of echoes what Ninjas does, only with film noir. Old,
Cool.
It's pretty cool stuff. And Seventh Son, pastor.
Absolutely.
I can get back.
Are there any podcasts that you guys listen to that are outside of the science fiction and fantasy realm?
Yeah, Out of the Past is film noir, but it's still movies, and I'm a big movie film geek. I have to do something with all this TV knowledge. So.
Top of the Pods is a comedy. They do a top 10 list every week.
I listen to one of the people on our network is named David English, and he interviews the big New York Times, the big New York authors, cross genre. It used to be just mystery, and now he's broadened out. So one day he'll be doing a New York Times YA author, next it'll be mystery, then it'll be something else. And it's really fascinating to listen to the big authors talk, because you realize they have the exact same problems you do when you're down where you are at my level. Their royalty checks are bigger, but they still have the same hassles. And so it's interesting to watch their process of how they put a book together and how they tell the story.
I listen to a couple educational podcasts, and then I listen to a photography podcast.
One of the podcasts on our network is the Georgia Politics podcast. So, and I really enjoy that because we bring in it's somebody totally different, not me, who hosts it, and he does a fabulous job bringing in just lots of diverse opinions.
I've always enjoyed the Battlestar Galactica podcast. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention my good friends Nate and Di of the Nate and Di Show, who would be here if their house wasn't flooded out by the recent hurricane. So they're really great too. As far as couple casts go, they've always been my favorite.
Couple casts,
witty and intelligent. So real quick, anything else? Because we need to head over to the Hive for the Parsec Awards. You are all invited. I hope you all come and tell your friends and bring them to Regency 5. Anybody else? Wonderful. So let's thank our esteemed panel of wonderful women podcasters.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you know a Georgia band or a hippie with a guitar who would like to have their music featured in a podcast, have them contact us by emailing info@gapodcastnetwork.com or calling 678-389-9441. This way, the ending of the shows won't seem so abrupt.